We light this chalice for our community, for those assembled here. To this time-honored vessel, we return once again, rekindling its flame, our symbol of safety and caring, our symbol of spiritual daring. We light this chalice for our intentional community, for those assembled here this evening. We gather in religious community to comfort and challenge each other and to live in awareness of our interdependence. Here in this intentional community, we increase our understanding of each other and strive to be compassionate. Let this be a place where we speak the truth in love. Let this be a place where justice lives in more than in our words. Welcome to our Summer Institute Evening Vespers. I invite you now to rise in body or in spirit for our opening song. I think most of you know it. It's "For All That Is Our Life." And I guess we're going to play through the whole thing as they rise.
Sure.
Okay. If you'd rise in body or spirit. This community reading is by Wendell Berry. It's from his essay, Home Economics, also titled Men and Women in Search of Common Ground. This is what Wendell Berry wrote. Some time ago, I was with Wes Jackson, wandering around the experimental plots at his home and workplace, the Land Institute of Salina, Kansas. We stopped by one plot that had been planted in various densities of population. Wes pointed to a Maximilian sunflower growing alone, apart from the others, and said, "There is a plant that has realized its full potential as an individual." And clearly it had. It had grown very tall. It had put out many long branches, heavily laden with blossoms, and the branches had broken off, for they had grown too long and too heavy. The plant had indeed realized its full potential as an individual, but it had failed as a Maximilian sunflower. We could say that its full potential as an individual was this failure. It had failed because it had lived outside of an important part of its definition, which consisted of both its individuality and its community. A part of its properly realizable potential lay in its community, not in itself. I should probably do a disclaimer. The reason I'm sitting on the stage, well, with Sandy, but the reason I'm on the stage is there's room for me down there, and I don't have to walk up and down the stairs. One of the Summer Institute traditions is to mark the passages in our community. And this is how I would like to do it this evening. I will invite us into a period of communal silence. And I do want to say to those of you in the balcony, those seats make noise. Try to be as still as possible. After a short time of quieting ourselves, I will invite you to speak aloud into the silence the names of those from our SI community in five categories, but one at a time. So I invite you now into a period of communal quiet for reflection, repose, meditation, and prayer. Into this silence, I invite you to speak aloud into this caring community the names of those SI attenders who have died since our gathering last summer.
John Porter.
Sandra Gaylord.
Ruby McFerrin.
Linda Johnson.
Into this silence, I invite you to call into this caring community the names of those SI regular attenders who just are not here with us this year.
David Herndon.
Ilsa and Angela Giuffre.
Bob and Diane Duffy.
David McGaugh.
Brandon and Bob Mulkey.
Bev and Larry Cole.
Marion Yeager.
Danny and Bobby Beal. Tracy Parsons.
Mel Hoover and Rose Eddings.
Brian Warren Bishop.
Mary Lou Holly.
Elaine Strong.
Renee Rukowski.
Laura Teagold and Aiden and Alex Teagold.
Jane Harkin. Laura Crystal.
Greg Sheffield.
Rita Shear.
Mary and David Schatzman.
Mary Thompson.
Into this silence, I invite you to call into this caring community the names of couples married this year.
Dana Bjorklund and Linda
myself, Hal Dixler, and Nick Derlinger, who got married.
Maureen Burke and Christine Bowers are now Maureen and Christine Burkwood.
Russell Kaplan and Bill Smith.
Harold Dobbins and Linda Hale.
Scott Evans and Alan Bowie. Judy Smith and Joanne Schroeder.
Into this silence, I invite you to call into the caring community the names of babies born this year into this SI community.
Rylan Alexander Carpel Zima, number 6.
Into this caring community, I invite you to share the names of those who come on your hearts and minds, that we might send them our love and concern this evening. For all the names which have been spoken aloud and those whispered only in the sanctuary of our hearts, we give our grateful thanks. I invite you now to continue in this period of quiet with a story from an anonymous source entitled The Cab Ride. I have two disclaimers before I read the story. I have trouble getting through the story myself. I'm sorry. And I did not write it. 20 years ago, I drove a cab for a living. It was a cowboy's life, a life for someone who wanted no boss. What I didn't realize was that it is also a ministry. Because I drove the night shift, my cab became a moving confessional. Passengers climbed in, sat behind me in total anonymity, and told me about their lives. I encountered people whose lives amazed me, ennobled me, made me laugh and weep. But none touched me more than a woman I picked up late one August night. I was responding to a call from a small brick fourplex in a quiet part of town. I assumed I was sent to pick up some partiers or someone who had had a fight with a lover or a worker heading for an early shift at some factory in the industrial part of town. When I arrived at 2:30 a.m., the building was dark except for a single light in a ground floor window. Under these circumstances, many drivers would just honk once or twice, wait a minute, then drive away. But I had seen many impoverished people who depended on taxis as their only means of transportation, Unless the situation smelled of danger, I always went to the door. This passenger might be someone who needs my assistance, I reasoned to myself. So I walked to the door and knocked. Just a moment, answered a frail, elderly voice. I could hear something being dragged across the floor. After a long pause, the door opened. A small woman in her 80s stood before me. She was wearing a print dress and a pillbox hat with a veil pinned to it, like someone out of a 1940s movie. By her side was a small nylon suitcase. The apartment looked as if no one had lived in it for years. All the furniture was covered with sheets. There were no clocks on the wall, no knickknacks or utensils on the counters. In the corner was a cardboard box filled with photos and glassware. "Would you carry my bag to the car?" she asked. I took the suitcase to the cab, then returned to assist the woman. She took my arm and we walked slowly toward the curb. She kept thanking me for my kindness. "It's nothing," I told her. "I just try to treat my passengers the way I would want my mother treated." "Oh, you're such a good boy," she said. When we got to the cab, she gave me an address, then asked, "Could you drive through downtown?" "It's not the shortest way," I answered quickly. "Oh, I don't mind," she said. "I'm in no hurry. I'm on my way to a hospice." I looked in the rearview mirror. Her eyes were glistening. "I don't have any family left. The doctor says I don't have very long." I quietly reached over and shut off the meter. "What route do you want to take?" For the next 2 hours, we drove through the city. She showed me the building where she had once worked as an elevator operator. We drove through the neighborhood where she and her husband had lived when they were newlyweds. She had me pull up in front of a furniture warehouse that had once been a ballroom where she had gone dancing as a girl. Sometimes she'd ask me to slow in front of a particular building or corner and would sit staring into the darkness, saying nothing. As the first hint of sun was creasing the horizon, she suddenly said, "I'm tired. Let's go now." We drove in silence to the address she had given me. It was a low building, like a small convalescent home, with a driveway that passed under a portico. Two orderlies came out to the cab as soon as we pulled up. They were solicitous and intent, watching her every move. They must have been expecting her. I opened the trunk and took the small suitcase to the door. The woman was already seated in a wheelchair. "How much do I owe you?" she asked, reaching into her purse. "Nothing," I said. "You have to make a living," she answered. "There are other passengers," I responded. Almost without thinking, I bent and gave her a hug. She held on to me tightly. "You gave an old woman a little moment of joy," she said. "Thank you." I squeezed her hand, then walked into the morning light. Behind me, a door shut. It was the sound of the closing of a life. I didn't pick up any more passengers that shift. I drove aimlessly, lost in thought. For the rest of that day, I could hardly talk. What if that woman had gotten an angry driver or one who was impatient to end his shift? What if I had refused to take the run or had honked once and then driven away? On quick review, I don't think I have done anything more important in my life. We're conditioned to think that our lives revolve around great moments. But great moments often catch us unaware, beautifully wrapped in what others may consider a small one. People may not remember exactly what you did or what you said, but they will always remember how you made them feel. People may not remember exactly what you did or what you said, but they will always remember how you made them feel. If we can, let us finish this silence by reading together George Odell's words, "We need one another." If you'll read with me, "We need one another.
One another. When we mourn and would be comforted. We need one another when we are in trouble.
May it always be so. I invite you again to rise in body or in spirit for our closing song. You probably don't need the words, but we'll put them up there anyway. It's "Spirit of Life."
This evening's announcements. Sacred Song Circle, this is a reminder, will be in Fairchild Chapel every afternoon at 5:00. All singers are welcome. The contra dancers have danced themselves over to Wilder, Maine, and that's where they're staying for the time being, I think. There will be an Al-Anon meeting tomorrow at 1:30 in the afternoon at the Asia House cafeteria. Ready, Set, Go is moving to the late afternoon time slot in the North Quad. In order to preserve domestic tranquility, the planning committee asks you not to change any restroom designations, any bathroom designations, without letting us know, please. We have our reasons. I don't know if you've noticed, but the folks at Oberlin are taking great care of us this year. And it's... They're looking around. They notified us that one of our cars had the visor light on, and somebody avoided a nasty surprise come Saturday morning, or sooner. But there are 600 of us, and are close, darn near. And if we all go to them with our requests, it's even with their great capabilities, it creates an unmanageable situation. So we'd ask you if you have a request for a facility that you see Scott Pifo, our assistant chair, or see one of the planning committee, it'll help make things run smoother. There was a red phone found in Monte Carlo just a few moments ago. Please see Amber Scott for that. And that is it for tonight's announcements. Thank you. Vespers is early tomorrow night, 6:30.
Yeah.